The Bible Study on KFUO Radio is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, centered in the gospel of Jesus Christ in faithfulness, servanthood, responsiveness, and excellence, Concordia Seminary. It's your turn. Ask the Pastor on the Bible Study, underwritten by Concordia Seminary. I'm Paul Clayton sitting in, and our guest is Dr. Victor Raj from Concordia Seminary. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning to you, Paul, and my beloved audience.
505-7850-1800-730-2727, the numbers to call. Perhaps you'll follow up on something we're discussing. Maybe you want to change the topic. That's okay, because like I said, it's your turn on Ask the Pastor. 505-7850-1800-730-2727. Dr. Raj, is this a quiet time for you on campus?
It is quiet time. Nevertheless, it is a little bit more noisy than 2 years ago. We have the new group of elementary Greek prospective first-year seminarians check in, and summer school is in session for the third week now. Yeah, so there is some life coming back to campus.
Uh-huh, yes. Yeah, yeah. It's a time to regroup, perhaps.
Indeed,
huh?
Indeed.
What will you be teaching this fall?
I'll be teaching what is summer term two, that is in July, the summer term two.
Oh.
I have two sections, one on Galatians. We read through the entire book of Galatians in 3.5 weeks. And that's at 8 o'clock, and by 9:25 or so, I go into Colossians, and we read through the entire book of Colossians.
Does the campus record these classes, and do they post them on the iTunes U?
Not on a regular basis. These are basically classroom face-to-face contact experiences. Unless we ask them to, they do not tape them or record them. But the iTunes U have other systemic courses that are taped and then disseminated.
I see. Yeah. So is this summer school for certain SEM students?
Yes. Summer school is a school of its own. It is its own system of things. And what happens is there are students who may need to make up a few courses that they could not do during the regular calendar year. Then they come and sit in, and then they are, some are advanced, and they have the extra time to do a couple extra courses, so in the next following year they'll have a lighter load. Those things happen. And there are pastors and others who come in also take a course.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Sort of like
a continuing ed
yes, thing.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
Our phones are open at 505-7850-1800-730-2727. This story appears online today. Christian visiting lepers beaten and jailed in India. You've had a chance to read the story. What's exactly going on here?
It is an ongoing struggle. I believe it's a struggle all over the world. Perhaps in a very bold way outside the United States, and perhaps also outside the Western culture, the difficulty in distinguishing faith and culture, and that is the first one, and added to that is the confusion that the two, when they are understood together, the confusion that creates in the minds of people. So you cannot do charity as a Christian, and suddenly it is understood to be conversion. At least it's a means in this kind of interpretation. It's a means to converting people. When you help a leper, when you provide aid in that sense, help for the poor or the destitute or the widow, anything that you do as charity, in the eyes of some revivalist revolutionary fanatics, it is understood and misinterpreted as a means to convert. So we could go back and forth analyzing this. I am quickly jumping into conclusions on this from a spiritual, theological, religious point of view. It is fear. It is fear that a certain religious group is losing its members by letting another religious group or a person who has another religious persuasion engaging in charity and social action and helping the poor, etc.
Let me give the story to listeners. Mm-hmm. A Catholic and two Hindu visitors with leprosy in Karnataka state were freed on bail on Tuesday, 2 days after they were beaten by suspected Hindu extremists and arrested on charges of forcible conversion. Police arrested the Catholic, retired Indian Army Corporal Henry Baptist Roby, and two guests from Tamil Nadu state, Ram Murthy and another identified only as Mani, from Roby's house in Bangalore, and while others were celebrating Pentecost on Sunday, June 12th. Is it illegal in India to do this, or is this just some local group that arrested these
people? It is some local group that is a significant factor of the whole story. And Paul, if you would go to the last, or at least the paragraph I can see as the last paragraph on this sheet, the crowd soon swelled up to over 100, while Robbie could not say with certainty who the men were. Some local residents later told him that they belonged to the Hindu extremist Jai Karnataka group, said to have close ties with the ruling Hindu nationalist Bharatiya Janata Party. They are a mouthful, but look at those words. So this is it. So this is where I see the religious dimension of it. Mm-hmm. And India, as my hearers would know, is predominantly Hindu. It's 83% Hindu all over the nation, mm-hmm. and about 11 to 12% Muslims, and then Christians are less than 3%. Karnataka, if you have a grasp of the map of India, is a southwestern state. It is immediately north of Kerala, which is about 30% Christian. And Karnataka, I'd like to think, is at least 9% Christians. And Bangalore, the city that is mentioned here, is that state's capital, where also we have major Christian theological institutions. The United Theological College is there. The Catholic Church has its headquarters there. The Bangalore has diocese for the Catholic Church as well as the Church of South India. So Christianity is not strange to that place. And it's only a few miles south of Goa, if you recall that. Goa is the Portuguese colony of yesteryears, and because of the foreign connection, nothing less, there is a significant Christian influence there. And go back to the second paragraph there. Police arrested the Catholic retired Indian Army Corporal Henry Baptist Roby. And this man is a Christian. Otherwise, mm-hmm. you would not have a name such as Henry Baptist Roby.
Oh.
Yeah, this man is a Christian. So, mm-hmm. And he was arrested. He's retired. Right, yeah. He was arrested for this. So this is a man who knows the law. And this man is written up for coercing or something for simply helping two leper people.
Now, as a Christian living here in the United States, that makes India sound like a dangerous place.
It is a dangerous place in this sense. And Christians are bold, thank God, to live there. And how a law can be misinterpreted and laws can be made instantaneously to affect something that I personally don't like. That's a sad situation. There's when people take the law in their hands.
It becomes subjective.
Correct. Mm. The state of India, the Republic of India, by constitution, does allow freedom of religion. Mm-hmm. And there are level-headed members of the parliament and what we call in the U.S. a Senate, etc. We call the assembly. There are people who may not and who are not Christian by personal conviction who would be deadly against this. That's why the state maintains, the nation maintains a pluralistic culture and appreciates the diversity that comes in. So from the sociological perspective and the psychological and moral and religious, spiritual perspective. So it does, until now, even now, allow, the constitution and the bylaws thereof do allow freedom of religion. That's the first point. And second point is, I'm not up to date with this, about as late as 12 years ago, there were at least 15 states out of the 25, 26 now. They were on their own through state legislator controlling this, what is now called conversion. So it came to a point at least several of them, five or six of them actually legalized, so made laws against conversion. So it came to a point where a person had to be minimum 18 years of age, and he has to go to the court that he was and make a statement, written statement, that he was not coerced or in some way lured into converting from one faith to the other. The converting, quote unquote, faith is Christianity. And
so Christians are being persecuted and discriminated against in some pockets of India.
Exactly, and it is so surprising that this is happening in Karnataka, which is in which state Christianity is not a stranger. This is the thing. Nevertheless, I think about 3 years ago, the state ruling government today is they have a majority. The last point said that the Bharatiya Janata Party and the Karnataka J Karnataka group, the Hindu extremists, have the majority. So they rule the state. So that is on the one side, and the other side is with that. And I still do not think, and I have not kept up with it, the state of Karnataka has passed a ruling against conversion. It is not legalized. There are no anti-conversion laws, as much as I know, that are legalized even in the state of Karnataka. But people are taking the law, the so-called symbolic mindset, and trying to work this against it. And I'm speaking on the news I've heard and conversation I've had with other people. There was like 15 years ago at least, there was this, there were two or three or four, maybe five, because Bangalore is a city of, it is probably the fifth largest metropolitan city in India. Mm-hmm. We're talking about close to 5 million. Oh. It's western. I mean, in terms of, and you can actually go someplace. There are street names and there are landmarks and so it's all western. McDonald's and Kentucky Fried all came there way before it got to other parts of India. And they came out in public. The Bharatiya Janata Party, or the Hindu extremists, actually was writing up Kentucky Fried Chicken, because they are in their faith, in their conviction, they are vegetarian. So they were trying to undo this, and they were saying that Kentucky Fried was using low quality meat. That's how they were trying. So this all it's a vicious cycle. It's branded as part of Christianity. Sadly, that's not the case.
Because it's Western, it's correct. United States.
Yeah, and then there was this years ago. This is at least 10 years ago. Whenever Valentine's Day. The same party was just working against that. But there were enough level-headed people and business people and youth and others to say this Valentine's is only in the secular sense of it. So they don't even know the story. The Hindu fanatics probably know who Valentine was.
So they're trying to protect some kind of identity.
And it's a mixing up of faith and culture. They have no clue as to what this is all about. That's the worst part of the story. Well, there's no better part of the story at all here. And now when it comes to charities, such as even helping the poor and including the lepers.
Yeah, and I want to know more about that. Now, you've got a country here that's sophisticated. And there's still lepers in that country.
Right.
Are there a lot of lepers?
There are quite a few. And in the fundamental Hindu way of thinking, in the ancient tradition, leprosy would be a curse from God. So they would be outcasts. I mean, this is the biblical story where Jesus touches the leper and heals, and then they were set apart from the mainstream and they had no place. And then you would see, when I was through college, I would see lepers. The place I grew up was relatively less in terms of a leper population. But you would still see lepers.
And correct me, is that contagious, leprosy?
The ancient thought says that it is, but it is not necessarily. It depends on what it is. So, I mean, it is a deformed appearance that gives to your body, and then once that is there, I'm speaking sociologically and socially. So you actually, by being there as a leper, this is a very, very class way of talking about it. You actually gain the favor or the sympathy of the person who is looking at you and then walking by. And put spiritually, you will then, your heart will go out to this person. You at least throw some money to that person or show a gesture. And then when you think about that, in that spiritual milieu, it also means that you are pleasing God by giving some help to this leper. This is a very, very graphic thing here. Mm-hmm. I am not biased as much as I know the history of India in an objective fashion. I believe Christian missionary movement was the pioneer in actually trying to do something for lepers. There are leper clinics. I mean, not only did Christian agencies come into places, countries like India as missionaries, but as they came in as missionaries, they also brought with them the entire services now we know are rendered by the RSOs, which would be hygiene, hospitals, schools.
There's clinics for lepers.
The clinics, yeah. There have been, even Missouri Synod had several people in Ambur and so on.
Oh, really?
There is Alice Brower, who still lives, and she is retired 10 years ago. She doesn't want to return to the United States. She's committed to dying there. And she would, I've seen pictures, I've seen him, seen her later, but in the 50s and 60s, she would be on her bike and biking to places with a local nurse and then visiting these people and then giving them shots and medications and stuff.
Yeah. Now these so-called police that arrested this Christian, this Catholic, and then beat him, are they likely to get away with this now?
When it gets to the court, they will be at least written up. Mm. They will at least be written up. But it's going to take a couple, 3, 4, 5 years. Who knows when that's going to come. But there might even be a compromise made. So this is a normal thing. And they are, in a sense, I cannot speak for their conscience, they are bound to take some action because somebody called the police, they had to step in, and they had to make a case. They had to, I'm using the word make a case to save face. That's how I'm looking at the whole story. Otherwise, there will be more riots. See, the last paragraph says the crowd soon swelled over to 100. And when that kind of escalation takes place, when the mob comes, even police will have very little control over the situation. So they would rather arrest the people and do something and put up an appearance that something was done.
So if I'm in this area traveling and visiting and I see a leper and want to toss them a coin, maybe I should just walk away.
It's probably tossing a coin might help you. But something more happened here. These lepers actually went to a camp, right? Yeah, violation of Section 295A, and I don't know what that is, but deliberate and malicious intention of outraging the religious feelings of others is punishable with imprisonment of up to 3 years and or a fine. So that's a law I do not know. It must be a law that the state passed already. So what contributes to a deliberate and malicious intention is circumstantial. In this case, apparently not only retired army Corporal Henry Baptist Robbie, he obviously must have had, he had two guests from Tamil Nadu, and these are obviously not foreigners. These are guests from the neighboring state who speak a different language. Okay? Ramurthy and other. Ramurthy is a very typical Indian name that has no sign of Christianity at all. It's just a generic Indian name, and I believe he's Christian. Another identified only as Money from Robbie's house of, on the road in the state capital of Bangalore. That's what surprised me. So it happens in Bangalore while they and others were celebrating Pentecost on Sunday. That's the thing. That's the context of the whole thing. So these lepers apparently are assumed to be Hindu. Mm. And why are they in a Christian congregation on a day of Pentecost? That's the context. So how did they get in there? It only tells us how open and friendly Christians are. We welcome people. And this welcoming gesture is misinterpreted by these people as a way of coercing forcing people to convert to Christianity. And the quote here says, Robbie's quote says, about 80 leprosy patients from the neighboring Tamil Nadu state had come to his house after he invited them for a special Pentecost prayer service. So all the leprosy patients who had come for the prayer function told the police that they were Hindu. So they were open. Mm. And that they were not being converted. So this is their own confession that they were not. Yeah, police couldn't take it. Yeah. But the police still registered a complaint against us, Robbie said. Police should have arrested the complainants who forcibly came into my house and searched every room and beat some of the leprosy patients as the police looked on. So instead of protecting people, they were actually working against the people who on their own free will came to this Christian place, and then obviously as they came, they would be participating in the prayer and so on. That's what it is.
So what if a Christian man falls in love with a Hindu woman in India?
Yeah.
Is there much of that intermarrying between
faiths?
Are there penalties for that?
It does take place randomly these days, and this is a little bit more popular in the metropolitan context where people live mm-hmm. together and people have other goals other than maintaining some kind of a stationary society and so on. Those things do happen. And there are challenges that both families have to face. Sometimes even families may not want, if they didn't have, unlike the Muslims, I'm a little very precise on this one. I'm very precise on this one. Unlike Muslims who would, as much as possible, try to put an end to this right away, or even after 3, 4, 5 years, would follow this up and try to break the marriage apart, or even if necessary take the life of the non-Muslim partner. I mean, this is not extreme, but this does happen. Hindus, on the other hand, are a little bit more tolerant, especially when it comes to marriage, because they value life a little bit more seriously than others I mentioned. And it does happen in the majority of instances. There will not be a lot of cooperation between the two families. They will let, especially in the metropolitan areas, mm-hmm. they will let the man and the woman go on their own, because they know that it's going to hurt if they did not comply, at least in silence, agree with what they are going to do. And sometimes, in a very gentle manner, a few years later, they compromise, accept, acknowledge, and then mm-hmm. try to build a Christian family relationship.
Cohabiting is on the rise here in the United States. Does that happen in India? Just live together?
It has not happened as rapidly as it is happening here, because I speak about the sins of the middle class, mm-hmm. and this is one of those things. When family, India has, I mean, studies have shown that India has close to a comparable number, a size of the middle class as the U.S.
Mm.
Yeah, you got that much. And that's why I talk about the sins of the middle class. And then there is independent living. There is living in the dormitories and hostels and hotels and so on. Mm-hmm. In such situations, cohabitation could take place, but it's much less.
Dr. Victor Raj returns for the second half of Ask the Pastor right after this.
Concordia Seminary has 4 core values. And one core value is excellence. People today demand the very best. Even people who ignore or misrepresent God's word of truth often strive for excellence. So shouldn't we strive all the more for excellence in our churches and seminary? Pastoral leaders will hold excellence high, helping invite people to the truth of our message.
The joys of summer visit us in June. It's been our joy and privilege to bring you the gospel message of Jesus Christ for these many decades. Would you consider becoming a June Day sponsor? Maybe you want to say thank you to your pastor or Bible study teacher. Maybe it's a celebration of a wedding anniversary. Whatever it is, you can say it with a KFUO Radio Day sponsor in June. Just call KFUO Radio at 314-505-7874 and ask for Joni. Tell her you want to be a KFUO Day sponsor in June.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Imagine you're debating a university professor on campus. Not only does he say unborn babies aren't human, he suggests a baby isn't a person until about 18 months of age. This is what happened to Stephanie Gray, but the poor guy didn't know who he was up against. Stephanie made mincemeat out of him. She said, human is an objective term we can determine scientifically, and the scientific community is unanimous. Life begins at fertilization. Those who refuse to acknowledge the humanity of the unborn child are living in the dark ages. Modern medical science has proven beyond a shadow of a doubt it's clearly a baby. Ultrasound has been one of our most effective tools, so don't be afraid to stand up for unborn babies. Science is on your side.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Censoring God. I'm Steve Coleman with today's Religion Roundup. NBC has apologized for editing the words "under God" out of the Pledge of Allegiance before Sunday's U.S. Open broadcast, but some Christian groups are demanding a fuller explanation. The network opened its broadcast of the final round of the golf tournament with a montage that included children reciting the pledge, but the words "under God" and "indivisible" were omitted. 3 hours later, announcer Dan Hicks told viewers, regrettably, a portion of the Pledge of Allegiance that was in that feature was edited out. He added, we'd like to apologize to those of you who were offended by it. But Jordan Seculo of the American Center for Law and Justice wonders who ordered the words "under God" cut out.
And why on earth did they think deleting "under God" would not get the, you know, the nation's attention?
The Reverend Patrick Mahoney of the Christian Defense Coalition says NBC issued a pathetic apology for an intentional omission. I'm Steve Coleman.
Have you been going through a difficult time recently? If so, who do you think has been orchestrating these difficult times for you? Would you be surprised to hear that God Himself is doing so? On the next broadcast with Pastor Mark Smith, we will discuss the Old Testament episode that teaches that God is in control.
Weekdays at 3 p.m. on KFUO Radio.
The music ministry at Peace Lutheran Church in Lima is offering a summer arts camp for all children entering grades 4 through 8. The arts camp will be held July 11th through the 15th, 8:30 a.m. until 12:30 p.m. at Peace Lutheran Church, 737 Barracks View Road. The session will include a vocal choir, recorders, choir chimes, and more. Registration fee $25, and that includes a t-shirt and daily snacks. For information, call Peace Lutheran Church, Lima.
It's Ask the Pastor. Dr. Victor Raj is our guest. Phones open at 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Dr. Raj, in New Delhi, India, thousands of refugees who fled Christian persecution in Burma's Chin state held a procession there to mark the 60th World Refugee Day on Monday, demanding legal protection in India and religious freedom back home. Our supreme aspiration is to live in our own native place of Chin State with dignity and free practice of our Christian faith, culture, and language. President of Chin Refugee Committee Stephen Rao Kap Thwang told the Lutheran Christian Post, that is, as he walked underneath a white banner imprinted with a red-colored cross leading over 3,000 Christian refugees. What do you know about this Chin State and the Burma? What are they? The Burmese military.
Because it's kind of the opposite of the story that we just read previous to the break. Because within India, I know from the story out of Bangalore, Christians are persecuted because they were inviting lepers in and. This service to the lepers, the socially, quote-unquote, unwanted people, are given a place to of acceptance and acknowledgement, and they are written up and they are arrested, and banned for doing that kind of service.
Mm.
And in the news story, in New Delhi, the state's capital, India's capital, a group of Burmese are Burmese Christians are looking for asylum or a safe place to live.
And they come to India.
So Christians who are under persecution in Burma, which is the current Myanmar, yeah, that's where it is. I mean, if you look at the geography, Burma, I'm used to saying this too, Burma is part of the old Indian subcontinent. That's a huge part of it. The southeastern tail end of the Indian subcontinent is Burma. And now you have Pakistan and East Pakistan and so on. They are all part of the old Indian subcontinent. Mm-hmm. So this is, but I do not know how many races, if you will, there are in this mass of earth there. So, right, they look, they have the Mongolian or the Chinese look to them.
Mm-hmm.
And religious, in terms of religion, Buddhism is a heresy initially that grew out of Hinduism. So it started out in India 500 years prior to the time of our Lord Jesus Christ. And then Hinduism was able to absorb that, even though it started out as a heresy within itself, and then include that. So it did not grow as an independent religion in India, although right now we are under 1% Muslims. 1% of the 1.3 billion or so people are Buddhist in India. Nevertheless, it has gone to the East and the Far East, to China, to Burma, to Sri Lanka, to Taiwan, to Korea and to Japan, and it is through that come through the Pacific to
that says States. Here over 90% of the 500,000 people in Chin State are Christian.
Yeah,
that's a phenomenal number.
Yeah,
how did they become Christians? The missionaries been working that area for
exactly
quite some time?
The 18th and 19th century missionary movement had Christian missionaries from the Western Hemisphere go to much of the Eastern Hemisphere and be missionaries there. And even today in Burma, the skylines will be adorned by the pagodas and stuff of the Buddhist religion, but there will be equally significant presence of Christianity in the Burmese culture as well. So this is a province which is similar to a county, shall we say, in US terms.
Okay.
Yeah. So 11,500 Chin refugees in Delhi have identity cards issued, I'm reading the fourth paragraph, by the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. They have no travel documents or legal identity, a Chin woman said. So this is the situation there. So this is coming from, there must be an intention, I have not kept up with the story, developing there. There must be an intentional persecution taking place in Burma. A couple of years, I remember, there were the Buddhist monks who were themselves revolting against the state of Burma,
mm-hmm.
For freedom, etc., etc. Now, Christians are persecuted, and India being pluralistic as it is, and being Christians being a minority in India, 3% or so, is allowing folks on religious grounds to come and for even Christians to come and find a safe place to live. That's an interesting story here, right?
Yeah, and these people don't have jobs either.
Yes, so it's just adding to the financial and the sociological
challenges. Less than 20% of the refugees had jobs.
Yeah.
Many among the refugees who have gathered today have had no food in the morning as they have no means to earn their living.
Yeah.
And they're doing this because they have such faith.
Yes, and interestingly enough, they have come to the state's capital, and I do not know what the future plan will be for them, and the state capital is metropolitan, and in cities such as Bombay and Madras and so on, how difficult even for a citizen from of the same country to find a little place. I mean, I'm told that in Mumbai, Bombay, you buy air by a square foot. That's how it is. I mean, you got 50 stories high risers, and you buy air on top of that and build if you can, or then live in the streets and stuff. And there is enough struggle finding places of residence for who are already people who are already citizens, and now refugees are coming in the thousands in the name of religion, which is not the state religion of India. India, by the book, doesn't have a state religion. And now this is an interesting challenge, and I am pleased with what the state is doing, and it's going to take time for them to settle. Will they all be able to come back, go back to Burma? I am not sure, because it's not like rehabbing people who are victims of tornadoes or hurricanes and stuff. It's actually leaving home for the sake of faith.
That's an amazing, you know, that, and for us here in the United States. Yeah. Now, we get upset when NBC drops Under God out of the Pledge of Allegiance.
Correct.
But we're talking about some real persecuted people here.
Yeah, real persecution. Mm. And then the fourth paragraph from the bottom says, extraordinary levels of state violence against the Chin Christians. Of the 71 households from 13 to 90 villages, 13 of the 90 villages and towns surveyed said government authorities had destroyed their local church buildings. So this kind of immigration, if you will, or people going into exile,
refugees,
they had lost their homes and they destroyed their church buildings too. So faith matters for these people. Faith in the Lord Jesus Christ matters for people. So this is very, very, very significant.
Now there's another story here. Speaking of churches, the Egyptian government moves to relax church building regulations. And here's the details. Building churches could get easier for Egypt's Christians if new government proposals are given the go-ahead. Until now, church building has been hindered by a complicated process which involves receiving permission directly from the president. Some Christians have waited years before receiving permission to build a new church. According to Aid to the Church in Need, the government's proposals would shorten the process considerably by having applications sent to the regional governor for a decision within 3 months. A bishop there has given his tentative support to the proposals. If these proposals come into law, it could mean that building churches will be almost on the same level as constructing mosques, he said. It is a major step forward for the citizenship of Christians. The bishop went as far to say as that the proposals were one of the first fruits of the demonstrations that led to the overthrow of President Hosni Mubarak.
Yeah, that's interesting, because what is Egypt? I think Egypt is under 2% Christian. If that much, and I love history. I think through the 70s until religion and state got mixed up too much. I'm talking about in countries outside the Western world. Religion within the Western world is a different story altogether. So until religion and faith and politics got mixed up, and church and state got mixed up significantly in the public square, public arena, I believe in most cases they're very intelligent and level-headed administrators. Non-Christians, I'm talking about, they allowed some kind of a peaceful coexistence. Mm. So you could do you may be 2%, maybe 1%, negligible minority, but you have the right to practice the religion in which you grew up or even propagate. This was your thing, so we will let you worship in your place. It was not a big deal, but in the last 20-25 years, things have really turned around. And I recall 25 years ago, even today, I think, especially in the place I was raised, this is a metropolitan city, state capital. You got to wait in line to get permission, get your permit to build a church. It's not just the land qualifying and doing all the basic things, but it's you may build a community hall. You may do a hospital. You may do a charity place. But when you call this piece of property a church, you got to go through several levels of clarification and clearance to finally get this done. So it's not that easy.
We hear about the home churches in China. Yeah. Are there home churches in India?
Yes. Yeah. This is a huge, huge movement. My theory is to be tested, but I strongly believe that the theological, definitely the philosophical and the sociological claim that these folks make is the early church, our church, the Christian church began in homes. Mm-hmm. And on the one hand, the challenges that the Western world faces, Western Christians face, is equally faced by the challenges that non-Westerns face. The traditionally Gothic constructed churches are not uncommon in India, and that's probably the case in all over the world. And you have a parish, a congregation of a thousand members, and as you go to the metropolitan places, even in India, the average attendance would be like 500 or 400. But they have weekly prayer meetings. Almost everybody, in spite of the business in which they live, they have weekly prayer meetings. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the pastors go and lead the prayer meeting. And in most places, the head of the household or the friends share leadership in terms of house churches. So the model is the faith is that we profess is also lived out in our real life community in the family. So the 3, 4, 5 families in the area come together Monday evening, in spite of the fact that they do go to church. And in that family prayer meeting, which lasts for an hour, sometimes even longer, non-Christians come too.
I think the most difficult thing for me to get used to if I was going to visit India would be the tremendous crowds of people.
Yes.
This huge, immense population.
Right.
And it might even be a little intimidating for somebody from the West.
Indeed.
Does that influence the way people think about the sanctity of human life and issues like that?
I think
with so many people.
Right.
It would make me feel so insignificant.
It matters so much. It matters so much there. It's I still have not kept up with the numbers, but broadly speaking, the geographical area of India is just about a third of the United States, including Alaska. Just about the third of the United States. Maybe Texas and Alaska together will make up much of India.
And how many people per square mile?
You got almost four times as many people living in that massive land as of the U.S. So you have four times as many people in a land of about a third of the United States size. So you got to expect to have people all over the world. I do not know the square foot each person has and stuff. There are enough significant forest and uncharted land that is there. That's how the ecological balance is somehow kept. But we lived in Cedarburg, Wisconsin, before we moved to St. Louis 16 years ago. And Cedarburg is a town of, when we lived there, it was under 10,000. That was a city of Cedarburg. I couldn't believe it. That's not even a village in the Indian understanding of the thing. So you got to have several hundreds of thousands of people to call it a city. So this is the perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So huge population. So Paul, if you would be in India, you would like to befriend somebody like myself or somebody who knows Western culture. So, or go to a tourist place and get your own
go
car.
Go on a tour or something.
Yeah. Something.
You wouldn't want to be on your own.
You wouldn't want to be on your own. It's not fundamentally a question of safety. It's a kind of what I would call private space. Yeah. You don't want to be one traveling, one of the 14 traveling together in one single car, a sedan. You don't want to be that.
Are there pickpockets?
Yes. Well, that's the crime that the pickpockets and looting and things like that. That's commonplace. Cheating of all kinds. That's unavoidable.
So, what about abortion in India? Is that an issue there?
It's an issue. The issues that we talk about in the Western world, including the churches in the West, are similar. All over the world, especially in India, you know, abortion is a moral issue for a lot of people.
What about euthanasia?
Euthanasia, I have not kept up with that. I do not know where this is. But abortion is legalized. At the same time, it is so infrequent there will be a security net, if you will. There will be, I have not heard, at least on a popular level, the so-called unwanted fetus.
Mm-hmm.
The blame is actually put on the mother, especially on the mother-to-be, for having had this pregnancy. Although in your weak moment you said this is an unwanted situation, but there is a grandmother, or there's an aunt, or somebody, significant other in the household, or there's an orphanage which will volunteer for that life to complete and come out of the mother's womb and be cared for.
Mm-hmm.
And this is common. Abortion is legalized and does happen. There are abortion doctors out there.
Do Hindus believe in evolution, or do they believe in a creator?
I need about 2 hours, and even then, I will not come to a complete consensus on this.
Yeah.
Personally, I believe they do. They appreciate. I mean, on the one hand, there's a popular idea that Hindus are mystical and spiritual, and what goes around comes around, and so on. This is all true. At the same time, they're also very practical. They justify evolution on the basis of their religion,
mm-hmm.
because what goes around comes around. The age of the universe is not 6,000 years or 6 billion years. Not even 60 billion years. If you do the cyclical way of thinking, it just goes around. It's fundamentally a modern...
A reincarnation.
A pre-modern way of looking at the postmodern recycling. That's what it is.
Hmm.
So it is actions of consequences. So certain actions accumulate in such a way that they are positive. This is such a broad painting of the picture. So if the actions, the residue of the actions are good, then they evolve... The next birth, maybe 1,000 years or so, it will evolve into a better form of life.
Ah.
And then you become human, and then ultimately you become God. That's so evolution works in that way.
Dr. Victor Raj from Concordia Seminary, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. James, you're on KFUO with Dr. Victor Raj.
Hi, James.
Hi, doctor. I'd like to ask you about the lotus plant. Could you kind of talk about it and what role it plays in Hindu spirituality? Just talk about the lotus plant and what it plays. And I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you. The lotus flower is one of those most fascinating flowers with its violet color and so on. It's also the seat of one of the gods. I forgot who that person is, but that's the point is you need objects to concentrate, and flower itself is something beautiful, something serene, something that brings peace and serenity to your mind, and there's a god who sits on that. That's one. And then the practical thing of that is the lotus. There is Lotus Sutra, and actually you... When you do the yoga, which is also becoming popular in the West too,
mm-hmm.
so you assume the lotus position. Yoga, in a practical way, is trying to balance the mind with the body, or vice versa. It's a way to focus and concentrate on things. So once you, if you did the objective way of doing things, and the body actually gets into a lotus appearing position, and then your mind is able to undo the pleasures of the body and the distractions, whatever they might be, and they help you concentrate into this. And this is a divine experience. Yeah.
Now, various health clubs and like the YMCA, they'll have yoga classes.
Yes. Yeah.
Should Christians stay away from that?
I could ask them to, but they won't. This is another faith and culture issue. What happens here is, I used to argue that yoga is not like playing tennis. Any sport, definitely tennis, something I'm familiar with, it involves your mind, okay? It's decision-making, instant decision-making, concentration, empowering your mind as much as your body. In tennis, as much as I know it, because it did not come with a religious foundation to it. On the other hand, yoga did. yoga initially is, as I said, the Lotus Sutra and the Lotus Position, etc. These are documented in the Hindu scriptures.
So there really isn't a secular way to do yoga?
This is the point. It has been. There is what's called Christian yoga. There is not only in the West, but all over India, there is yoga, exercise classes, and so on. So the people do not at all, in the 99% of the cases, when they do yoga, they don't think religiosity. It's a mind and body. You make a decision, and then you are able to tame your body to that kind of decision. That's what yoga is doing. And my practical advice to my Christian friends, brothers and sisters, is if you like yoga, go for it, but put a psalm in your mind to meditate on. You got to have a mantra to meditate on. That's the point of a mantra, is to help you concentrate.
Well, what if you use the Lord's Prayer as a mantra?
Please. Yeah. So to help you focus on what you're doing, that this is something God-pleasing, and it is good for your own spiritual life, etc. Mm-hmm. So can you keep your mind empty for so long? So initially the Hindu sages suggested all these sophisticated mantras for this. And those of us who are not familiar with the Hinduism, I myself am not, my mind is not Hindu. I read Hindu scriptures as a scholar, as a student of scripture or texts, and my mind is not there. My spirit is not there.
So you haven't done any yoga?
I've not practiced yoga. I'm not trained in it, but I've known several Christians and numerous Christian priests, pastors who do it. I've not done it myself, mm-hmm. but I know the techniques, some of the techniques.
Any of your family members?
No, not my immediate family. I do not know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Pastor Victor Raj, you'll be teaching some classes here this summer. Is that open to the public or just to the students?
I think right now the registration is all closed. It's intensive, so they were closed like about a month ago or so. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You're going to have a good summer. And right. Do you get back to India?
It's now 2 years since my wife and I were able to go. 2 years ago, April is when we went.
Mm-hmm.
Plans to go next year.
And you have relatives there still?
All my relatives. My dear wife and our three sons are the only ones of this Raj family, blood family, that is in the U.S. Everybody else is in India.
Are they all Christian?
They are all Christian.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You were raised that way?
I was raised that way. I was raised Lutheran. My dad was a Lutheran school teacher. His dad was Christian, and his dad also, as much as we know, five generations of Christianity and three of Lutheran Christianity, Missouri Synod kind of Lutheran Christianity in our household.
Dr. Victor Raj from Concordia Seminary, and you also worship at Christ Memorial Lutheran Church?
Correct, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes lead the Bible study there,
yes,
don't
I
you?
Do.
Yes,
I yeah.
do. Dr. Victor Raj, always good to have you in the studio. Thank you. Have a good summer.
Thank you very much, Paul.
All right.
God bless.
Thank you. All right, coming up next, we've got Moments of Assurance with Pastor Mark Hawkinson. That's Ask the Pastor on the Bible Study, underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis. Listen Monday through Friday at this same time on The Bible Study. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for The Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the web at kfuo.org. Download programs from the Bible Study archives at kfuo.org. The Bible Study is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis.